Hi, I'm W2P Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we're here with
Molly Smith-Metzler,
who's the playwright of the new play, Cry It Out, which is now at Studio Theater now through December 16th. Thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Now, before we dive in, I just want to let our listeners know, they have seen your work, even if they don't know, because they've been watching Shameless and Orange is the New Black, and they know your words, your creativity, they've seen before. But just give us a sense of what you were saying before we jumped on here, where you grew up and, you know, where you're based now, and what brought you over here to D.C.?
Well, I'm here in D.C. because Studio Theater is on my bucket list as a playwright. I've seen several productions there and I've always wanted to work there, so I've come 3,000 miles just to be a part of the fun tonight.
And see the leaves.
And see the leaves, yes. But I'm from the Hudson Valley in New York State, but Kingston, New York, which is 90 miles north. When I grew up there, IBM had closed, and so it was sort of a recessed town, and now it's, since 9/11, it's sort of Brooklyn, basically. It's, you know, where you go to get a high-end coffee, so it's very strange to be from somewhere that's changed that much. But yeah. In 2016, my family relocated to Los Angeles because, you know, the nature of television, it's mostly there, and I was really flying back and forth too much. So we moved in 2016 so I could write for Orange is the New Black.
Well, we're glad to have you here. I'm sure we can go into more in your TV writing and you know, later in the interview. But let's talk about the reason for the season here. Cry It Out. Give us the premise. Tell us what it's about. It's about two different sets of parents.
Yes, Cry It Out is set in a town in Long Island called Port Washington, where I actually did live for a little while. It's a town where there's an incredible class striation. So there's a very, very wealthy community that lives up on the cliff in Sands Point. And then there's sort of working class community that lives mostly in rental duplexes on sea level below this cliff. And so the play is about four new parents who are from different classes. But at the core of the play is about a friendship between two brand new moms who are both within walking distance of each other's homes. So they figure out if they stretch their baby monitors, they can meet in person and have that much coveted and much needed social interaction you need when you're home with a baby. So I think it's about friendship. It's about the experience of having a new child. It's about maternity leave. It's about paternity leave. It's about how much your marriage is cracked open when you have a child, and basically how much your entire life is cracked open when you have a child.
Now, tell me more about the baby monitors that piqued our interest. Do they start here? Like, do they pick up each other's frequencies, and that's how they start talking, or what? How do the baby monitors factor?
Well, it's inspired from a real event, which is you buy these video monitors so you can see the baby, but they're supposed to stretch. I think technology is getting better, but when I had a baby, they could stretch about 90 feet. And so I had a woman who lived across the street who needed a cup of milk, who was home with a newborn. And we figured out we could meet in the middle of the street if we both stretched our baby monitors. But then if we either of us crossed too far, they would beep sort of aggressively, like beep, beep. And then you lose your picture, which is a huge panic when you have a new child. So that was
like a dog with one of those electric fences.
Yeah. So the play begins with these two women figuring out that they can meet in this sort of sludgy patch of land between their two houses, but if either of them moves too far, it's it's a very funny but also very real problem.
Awesome. And take me more into the two moms here. These are our central characters. Obviously, you said you've sort of in the whole setup is that, you know, that they're these different classes. One is this like wealthy, accomplished lawyer, and one's more, you know, I guess blue collar, right?
Yes.
What did it say? Community college dropout, it says?
Yes, yeah. Lena, yeah.
That's just sort of the basics. But take me more into each of their characters. Like, what does each of them have? What's their arc? What do each of them have learn from the other one throughout this?
Well, I think at the heart of the play, we have Jessie, who's a corporate lawyer in New York. She comes from money, though she's very humble and modest about it, especially with her new friend who does not come from money. But Jessie and her husband have been living in the Upper East Side. When they got pregnant, they moved to Port Washington and they've bought this new house that they're living in. It's a newer construction. It probably cost $1 million. And she is, she doesn't say it explicitly, but I think we get the feeling she's the breadwinner of this family. She's up for partner this year at her law firm. She went to Columbia Law. So we're dealing with a kind of very accomplished and successful woman who is in a bit of an identity crisis because she's feeling feelings she did not anticipate feeling, which is she'd like to stay home with her child.
Right.
So contrasting that, we have Lena, who failed out of community college. She comes from the South Shore of Long Island, which is like, you know, coming from Wildwood, New Jersey. It's, right, you know, big parties, not much money. She comes from a huge Italian family. She works as an administrator in a hospital in an entry-level job. And she is living in Port Washington with her boyfriend, who she's not married to. It's just her boyfriend. his mother's rented house. So she's been renting this house for 37 years, and they are kind of squatting there so that their new son can go to an excellent school. But so they come from, you know, very different thing. I mean, just in the sense that Jesse is married, upwardly mobile, from money, and she's married to someone who comes from a lot of money. And Lena is none of those things. But yet they have this huge thing in common of both having a new baby.
Well, it's a fascinating premise on the page for sure. Now, tell me more. How does it manifest itself on stage? You know, we have these baby monitors. I'm just wondering how it actually plays out choreography-wise with the monitors on stage.
Yeah.
Like, what are we seeing?
Well, what I think is exciting is that it seems for a while that what we're going to watch is these two women become friends. You know, they've figured out how to come together with the baby monitors, and they, you know, you're sort of dying of loneliness when you're home with a child.
Right.
So they figure out a way to just become friends. And I think there's a sense halfway through the play, no, 30 minutes into the play, of, oh, maybe this is what the play is. We're just going to watch these two women be best friends. But then suddenly a third character appears, and it's this man, you know, who lives up in the cliff in this one of these very opulent mansions, who's been watching them. And he comes down to sort of ask them for a favor. And at that point, the whole play sort of shifts into another thing, because what he wants to know is, you know, can my wife come join your coffee klatch? Because she has a baby too, and she's going through a hard time.
Yeah.
So then the play kind of pivots and becomes a little bit more about, about class and socioeconomics, but also about sort of these major decisions we have to make. And what we owe each other as neighbors.
Who plays these two wonderful ladies?
Jessie's,
or actually three, because it sounds like a third one gets in.
Jessie is being played by M. Joy Gavino, who is, did I say that right? Gavino?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay.
And she's not from here. She's from Chicago. From Chicago.
Yeah.
And her reputation precedes her, because I just did this play in Chicago and heard her name while I was there. Dina Thomas is playing Lena, and she's such a Lena. It's incredible, but you would think she's from Long Island, but I don't think she is, actually. She just moved to D.C. I think this is her coming out role, and I anticipate she will work for the rest of her life in D.C. after playing this role. Tessa Klein is playing Adrian, who is she's so stately and tall, and she's really exciting in the role. And then Paula Adino is playing Mitchell with such tenderness, and it's a really wonderful ensemble cast, and they're very different. So it's very specific and nuanced, and, you know, I always think of this play as sort of a string quartet. You know, I've written plays that feel like big brass band plays,
right,
you know, or comedies. This always feels very string quartet to me, very small, and it's, these instruments are very different, and the four of them play it so beautifully. Like, the melody of it, it's really right where it should be. It's a beautiful production that Joni Schultz has directed.
I like that analogy.
Thank you. Well, all of our plays are different. Or, like, you know, sometimes I think of it like a metronome, too. Like, some of my plays are adagio, some are staccato. And this play, to me, is, it's, you know, it's smaller. It's a string quartet, sort of, that's, I think, yeah, adagio.
Do you have a musical background? I'm wondering, I'm curious why you instantly jumped to that analogy.
Well, I played piano, but I actually think it's that I grew up a ballerina. So, so even though I'm terrified of the stage in the sense that I could never be an actor, I don't think I could be a director either. I just am sort of terrified of the stage. But growing up a dancer, I have a sort of profound understanding of the stage and what it feels like to have that light on you and the relationship with the audience and the sort of musicality of the stage. So I do tend to think of, I tend to think of my work in movements.
I love it. That's good. Wait, so now I'm curious. How did you move from, this is your life. How did we move from ballerina into playwriting? I mean, did you write plays? Have you always written since, like, high school, or I want to know how you got from there to starting to writing plays.
Well, long story short, I was a serious ballerina, and I kind of got hurt in high school, which gave me a chance to taste pizza and to date boys.
What are these two parts?
I know, but the real answer is, you know, I always wrote, but in journals. I was a big reader. I always thought I'd get a PhD and become a professor. I didn't really realize I was a creative writer.
Like English? Or
yeah. Like, you know, I just sort of read and wrote about other people's writing. And then I went to college. I went to the State University of New York at Geneseo. And I randomly took an elective class in playwriting. And I knew it that night. You know, I went home with the assignment to write a scene between two people. And it was one of those things where I stayed up all night by accident, didn't move, didn't breathe.
Yeah.
And said, you know, what is this thing? I have to do this. And I've been doing it since, which, you know, has not always been a flawless ride. You know, it entailed incredible years of waitressing and struggle. But the fact is, it's the thing that wakes me up at night and still is.
When you're going table to table as a waitress, are you still thinking of it in movements?
No. No, I'm thinking of it in cash money. Is what
the ultimate movement.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, tell us, how do you get, connect the dot to starting to write for Orange is the New Black, and remind us some of the episodes that we might have seen that you had your hand in.
Well, I will tell you, everyone always told me as a playwright in New York that I should be writing for television. My voice would just really lend itself to TV. And I was never, to be honest, sure that was true. But I hoped it was true. But, you know, you don't know until you're in a writer's room and you're on episode. But I started writing for a show called Casual on Hulu, which was a really fantastic first job. And then I did a season of Orange is the New Black, which was a little harder because it's 1 hour. So you're going from half hour to 1 hour. And those characters, I worked on season 5, and those characters were so well established.
Right.
Taking
it and running with what they
were. Yeah, exactly. And so it was challenging and wonderful. But I did one season on Orange, and I wrote the episode where it's Janae's backstory, where it's called Sing It White Effie, but it's about the Dream Girls cast, that they're an all-white Dream Girls. Anyway, it was a great episode. It was super fun to shoot. You know, you spend a month in New York in jail with prisoners. It's really fun. But then I got we're at my current job, which is Shameless, which is just the perfect fit for me. I've been there 2 seasons. I just signed on to do 2 more seasons. I'm producer and writer for that show. And what's incredible about that show for me as a playwright is it's that wonderful thing of it's hilarious and so sad. And usually when it's done well, it's both in an episode.
Right.
So it reminds me a lot of playwriting in general, where all the comedy comes from the characters, but there's something under the hood. There's something to say. It's about family and love, and actually, it's really about class and the struggle of being poor in this country. So these are subjects that I really latch onto. So lucky me, my day job is doing that all day.
With William H. Macy.
Who is a love. And, you know, it's an incredible honor to write for him. And he is very collaborative. I mean, the entire cast is. But to remind you of a couple of episodes I wrote, this most recent season that's on right now, I wrote this mid-season finale. So I wrote kind of Fiona's downfall. And I also wrote episode 2, which is when we first see Mo White, which fans will recognize is played by Dan Lauria. Mm-hmm. And then I wrote 1 more coming up in January. I did a lot of writing this season.
What's the one coming up in January? Can we tease it without giving anything away?
Sure. It's episode 11 out of, there's 14 episodes and it's episode 11. But it is, in my opinion, Emmy Rossum's finest performance in the entire series.
Wow.
So
because you wrote it. You know.
No, actually, I mean, like I said, she's very collaborative. So it's really great to write with her because she has a lot to say. She has a lot of thoughts and you kind of find it together. It's a lot like theater.
Sure.
But I kind of drag her through the mud in my episode and her performance is so beautiful. I'm really excited for everyone to see it.
Aw. What advice would you have? We have a lot of creatives in this town. What advice would you have for other up and coming people that would want to try their hand in, you know, writing a pilot or even cracking into that industry?
Into television and film writing,
yeah.
Well, I think probably you should go to Los Angeles is the truth. I mean, I resisted going to Los Angeles for a very long time. And ironically, my first job as a TV writer was in New York. So it can be done.
Right.
But 90% of it is there.
Sure.
And my advice would be that, you know, more than people realize, it's collaborative. In a lot of ways, coming from theater is the perfect training for television writing, because at the end of the day, you're sitting in a room with writers thinking up a story together, and then you're giving notes to the other writers, and you're kind of, it's like rowing, you know, you're a team.
Right.
So I would say if you are a novelist, or if you like hanging out in your attic alone, it's not for you. TV is not for you. Screenwriting might be. You could write a movie from your attic. But, you know, if you enjoy building things with other people, then that's a good sign that you'd be a good fit for television. And I would say, you know, to write the pilot, but then write the next pilot, and write the next pilot, not to get stuck on one project.
Right.
Because TV, unlike theater, it moves so fast. So it's you're better off having 10 things to show for yourself than one really good one.
Because put it back in the drawer and write the next one.
Exactly,
and
to get writing, but also to be collaborative. I would say if you want to do TV, get out there and start to meet people and collaborate, because that's what it's all about.
And bringing it full circle back here to this show, why is it refreshing to kind of escape that world of TV and just keep coming back to, you know, the playwriting thing that kind of started it all for you? Why is it a refreshing, almost re-energizing experience to get out of that realm and get back to the stage?
Well, you know, playwriting is everything to me. It's being a playwright is that what I am. I still self-identify as a playwright. Mm-hmm. My agents don't like that, but that's the truth. My agents like stop talking about theater in your meetings.
The TV is the side
gig. I know. Yeah. But, you know, and I've started to write movies now too, which is also, you know, very challenging. Like these three forms are all very challenging, but playwriting is, you know, the thing that's dearest to my heart. And I'll tell you that what's refreshing about it is how hard it is. It's so hard. I mean, I was watching Dress Rehearsal last night being like, should I cut that line? You know, and this play is now published. It's had 5 major productions. It's, sure. You know, but it's so hard. And what's refreshing about it is that it's art. I mean, you know, not the TV isn't, but it's changing. We write something. I mean, I have 3 episodes on air right now that did not exist in June.
Right.
They did not exist in June. That's, you know, it takes 2 years to write a play. So it's all about the long game and the suffering and the pain, and I love it.
What were the other 5 productions you said? It's had 5 already.
It's had a bunch. It premiered in Louisville at the Humana Festival, so I was there for that. And then the next production was in Chicago at Northlight. I was there for that one. And then it was in Los Angeles at the Echo, which was a great production. And then it's had some others that I've not gotten to see, but that I heard were wonderful. Dorset Theater Festival in Vermont did it. Phoenix Theater in Indianapolis did it. Went to a theater in Key West. There's been quite a few others. And then it's got a lot coming up. After D.C., I'm going to Detroit to see the opening at Detroit Public Theater.
Nice.
Yeah.
But why, before we get there into Detroit, why is, you know, dote on, make our studio theater folks here blush a little bit, you know, dote on them a little bit. Why has it been so, you know, great working with them in this? I mean, you've had 5 other places, but what makes this a little unique?
Well, it's studio theater. It's, I mean, I think studio theater they just program them. I don't want to brag because I'm one of them, but I so aspire to be a writer that gets to go up to studio theater. I think they have the best taste in contemporary plays. These, and their productions are so thoughtful and just beautifully produced, and these actors are all so fine. And it, to me, it's just sort of a pedigree thing. It's, you know, studio is where you want to go up in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And I also think the audience, I mean, I've seen enough there I'm dying for the audience, the studio, to experience the play. And I really want to know what they think of it, because I think they're so smart. You know, they're just very thoughtful and intellectual, and they come with an openness, but they also come with a point of view. It just seems like the perfect home for this play. And I'm dying to see how they experience it. But yeah, it's a bucket list thing to be here.
Awesome. So are we going to cry it out, or are we going to laugh a lot, or explain why? In closing, why should our listeners, if they heard this, why should they come out?
Well, I can't promise you won't cry, but I can promise you will laugh. It's a very funny play about a very painful subject. But I think that a good production like this one, which is an outstanding production, you're laughing more than you're crying. And I think that feels really right. But these performances are fantastic. And you know, it's good to laugh about something painful. That's how I think we all need it right now. Awesome. We all need to laugh right now.
Definitely. Well, thanks for making me laugh during this interview. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason.
Molly, again, it's Cry It Out now through December 16th at Studio Theater in D.C. Molly Smith-Metzler, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jason.